Hybrids are growing like crazy, not just in the United States, but all around the world. And this is putting a lot of fear into the market and into a lot of people that have been following electric vehicles very closely. Are electric vehicles becoming irrelevant? Are hybrids the new technology? So we invited Sam Corus from ARC to help us understand what is happening out in the market.
How does Wright's Law impact the competition between hybrid vehicles, ICE vehicles, and potentially even ICE vehicles?
And so let's go ahead and get started with the conversation.
I think Wright's Law is such a powerful tool, but then there's so many nuances to it that make it interesting.
Right.
And just knowing something's going to decline in cost doesn't give you a crystal ball into how the market develops. It can say this technology's going to be viable, but it doesn't tell you that customers are going to have range anxiety and need 100 miles of range before they'll touch an EV, right? So that's something you need to touch on. So maybe very high level, Wright's Law. It states that for every cumulative doubling, you get a fixed percent cost decline. So for the auto industry, this has been roughly 15%. For every cumulative doubling, the cost of a car has come down 15%. And this is held over 100 years. Which is pretty crazy. So if you look at the Ford Model A and you look at the equivalent today, what was the Model A? It was like a rinky-dink little car. It had almost no horsepower, I think, and it could go up to 30 miles an hour. What is that equivalent today? It's equivalent to the rickshaws we see in India. And if you look and you do inflation-adjusted, Wright's Law holds over 100+ years to get you there. But then this gets to the first intricacy, I would say, of Wright's Law, which is it's great that you can forecast and you say, wow, we can have an 8-horsepower car that's going to cost $2,000 100 years out. But that's not really useful. So you need to performance adjust in some way. And this is interesting to do for vehicles. One way that we went about it for gas-powered cars is doing it on a dollar per horsepower basis. And you can argue, is this the best way to do it? Is it not? It actually holds, again, quite well over a century for looking at Ford's vehicles and price adjusting on a dollar per horsepower basis from Model A through Ford Fusion today. It gets you quite close there. But then you go to an electric vehicle and you say, is dollar per horsepower the right metric, or what is the right way to evaluate this? So before we go down that, those are like certain intricacies in just doing that. I'll go to the second interesting point here, which is that for Wright's Law, you can do it on individual components, but those individual components tend to trickle up and match whatever is done at the highest level. So it's like for automobiles, it's 15%. And you could do it for each individual part. And you're like, wow, this is great. I'm understanding doors and hinges and all of this. But then it's like all of those advancements are what trickle up to that higher level 15% cost decline. So it's, you can do it. We've done it for battery cells, and that is roughly 20% for lithium ion batteries. If you do that, it still trickles up to roughly 15% for the total vehicle. So that answers one of your questions, Larry. But then
that's a brilliant answer. So that really gets me to understand that change. And yeah, that clarifies it a lot. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
Okay. Now intricacy number three, which is how can that be possible? And that's because it's cumulative doublings. And so we need to think about this. So if we look at EVs, there have been, this is going off of end of last year, there's roughly 30 million pure battery electric vehicles that have ever been made in history. And you can look at we've got a pretty good read on what sales will be this year. You can make whatever informed decisions you want over the next few years. And you can say that over the next many years you want to choose, 5 years, you're going to get a cumulative doubling. We would say faster than that. But to cumulatively double 30 million is quite doable. If you look at the number of internal combustion engine vehicles that have ever been made, you're now at 2.5 billion, right? So now, even though, so now you've got the battery, which is a big cost component, and the rest of the vehicle, which is quite mature. And so now these two have an interesting interplay where the largest cost component for an EV is coming down much faster in cost because of the lower cumulative install base. So I think that answers maybe partial of that same question.
It does partially answer, but it still confounds the hybrid question.
Yeah. So, well, I want to throw this onto all of you and your thoughts on hybrid before I go down that rabbit hole. Are any of you taking has the uptick in hybrid currently changed any of your thinking about this transition?
That's a fascinating question because I've just finished a study in hybrids. In fact, we're going to be posting that on Fazard's channel in the next day or two, in the next couple of days. It's recorded. It's in the process of being recorded. And one of the interesting factors is that in terms of hybrids, I regard them as a sugar high. They're really answering this question, this anxiety about range on the one hand, where we haven't done a great job of educating people just how superior the Tesla ecosystem is as far as range is concerned, because people have bought the cheaper EVs and the short range EVs have had really terrible experiences. Jim Farley famously tried to drive across the country in a Mustang and soon realized just what a fool's effort it was. But on the other hand, even Tesla drivers, some Tesla owners, are not aware of just how convenient traveling across country is. I had somebody for dinner last night whose wife has a Tesla. He bought a hybrid because he's worried about the range. He didn't even understand how the Tesla Navigator works. He was confounded to hear that it could plan this trip for him and how easy the trip was. And so anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that there's this element of Nick not understanding it. There's this element of dealerships selling the EVs. But more than anything else, it's this whole issue of distribution of the vehicle. And the ICE manufacturers have lost so much money trying to distribute their EVs through dealership networks. They don't understand the direct sales. It's impossible for them to make that change. So you've got this huge stranded asset of all these dealerships and all this ICE manufacturing. And so there's this pushback. And I think that's what we're seeing. Hybrid is just a natural attempt for them to get out of the EV race, as it were.
I largely agree with that. I think the way I view the hybrid is, if you look at markets where there is a much better understanding of the value proposition of an electric vehicle, i.e. Europe and China, electric vehicle adoption is happening much quicker. There's also different factors going on. There is better infrastructure. There is a stronger push from the government. In the case of China, the Communist Party is saying EVs now. People are like, okay, EVs now, right? But Europe and places like Norway or the Scandinavian countries and a lot of parts of Europe, you're seeing a higher adoption of that technology because the value proposition works. It lowers your cost of fuel. Most people don't drive more than freaking 50 miles a day. In Europe, everything's super dense. And so the equation is a little bit different in the United States related to the other places. The way I view what's happening here with hybrids is that the legacy automakers, that is their only way to make money with a next generation technology of transportation. We've already seen their track record with electric vehicles. Ford can't make a penny. Even newcomers outside of Tesla like Rivian and Lucid are struggling mightily to make money on EVs. The only company that can make money on EVs is Tesla. So the only way to seem like they are playing the game and actually, you know, serving the market, and the market is demanding for lower costs and, let's say, next generation drivetrain units, is through the hybrid technology. But where it completely breaks for me is we're talking about Wright's Law, right? Wright's Law is, as you get better and you become, this is my primitive brain way of thinking about it, as you get better with the technology, it becomes cheaper. Hybrids just add complexity to the system. So I don't even know if hybrids can ride down the Wright's Law curve, because now you're adding a secondary form of propulsion in a lot of ways. You're just adding more complexity. You're adding additional steps to the assembly line. It shows these companies have trapped themselves in this type of manufacturing process, and they don't have the culture to break away from it or the expertise to break away from it. So for me, and I can't get this image out of my head, I read on X like a few months ago, hybrids are like the VHS DVD combo players. Y'all remember those?
Yeah.
Where people were struggling to move away from one thing to the other. And so there was a huge market for these combo players. That's what the hybrids feel like to me. Because it's still a gas car, y'all. Yeah, right? It's still a gas car. It just has this additional thing on top of it. Yeah, that was a little ranty, but that's how I view the equation. I'll throw it to Hans before we go to Sam here.
I think that looking at it cumulatively and globally is the important thing. And then looking at it long term. So I think that the US market specifically, because we have lower fuel prices and we drive further distances, like those two factors make that range anxiety piece a lot bigger here than it is. I think South Korea is one of the only other places that feels range anxiety the way that we do here in the United States. The US and South Korea are really not that big of an auto market globally when you look at all things considered. And so we may be laggards in the adoption, but I wouldn't look at the trends that we see here in these markets as really the dominant market trends globally. So when you do look at dominant global market trends, it is for higher fuel costs and shorter travel. And I think that's going to push the majority of the auto market really in the direction of EV. And we might see a distortion for a while with hybrids, that it is going to create a bubble for a period of time that kind of is able to, like you said, here in the United States, it may be a bubble that is relatively sustainable because we have both the powerful interests of all these legacy automakers and all their dealership networks, which there's a lot of political power that is entrenched in auto manufacturing unions, dealership unions, and then just the auto companies themselves. So yeah, maybe that's a thing that is able to persist for a while. But when you look at the rest of the world, I think that the Wright's Law for BEVs compared to hybrids operates because all of the parts of the hybrid that are not really benefiting from the accelerated rate of cost cutting from EVs is going to just make them economically unviable on a global basis in roughly the same amount of time. It might take a few extra years. We may be shifting 5 or 10 years worth of global adoption on a small percentage of the overall market. That's how I think about it at this point in time.
Yeah. All right. As far as keep me on track here, there's three things I want to tackle. First, we'll go the Wright's Law. Then we'll go why hybrid. And then the third will be sustaining versus disruptive innovation. And so on the Wright's Law element, I think an easy way to frame it is the reason that pure battery electric vehicle is on a unique curve here is because of that cumulative doubling and the battery, it being the largest cost component, right? So it's, wow, this is new. You're right. 20 to 30% of the vehicle is coming down a steep cost curve than what's been in place. For hybrid, it's what is the cost of what you're adding? And does that actually move the needle? The answer is not really. Does it give you better gas mileage? Certainly. So it's like that from that element, it's great. But from, is this going to change the ability of an internal combustion engine to lower costs dramatically? I would say no. Then on the why hybrid, to me, it makes sense, right? It's like, why? I just picture myself, anyone who's buying a gas car, so what are you doing? Wake up, at least get a hybrid. So it's, if you're scared of EVs, at least get a hybrid. It's, you look at the numbers too. It's not hybrid versus gas. It's not hybrid versus pure electric. It's everything versus internal combustion. And the internal combustion engine is losing out. And so hybrids are eating share of internal combustion engine. And if you look back over the past 10 years, pure electric is eating the share of hybrid. And so that's, to me, that's a very easy way to frame it and ties into the third point here, which is the sustaining versus disruptive innovation. And this was probably in the 2016, 2017 time period where I feel like this was a in vogue conversation to have, which is Tesla disruptive? Are battery electric vehicles disruptive? And the standard tagline was, as soon as XYZ major automaker decides to do this, they're going to be dead in the water. And I think time and time again, we've seen that is certainly not the case. So it's, at least in my mind, it's very clear that there is, beyond just the electrical engineering, which is different, Teslas are software defined vehicles. And that is disruptive to the mechanical engineering basis of internal combustion engine vehicles to date. And so this is fundamentally different. And then maybe ties into how do you define performance for a battery electric vehicle, given that it is becoming more and more software defined. So I think my big summary here, I think we look back in 3 years and people go, oh, at one point in time, people were excited about hybrids.
I think that's an illuminating set of points. And I think it definitely supports my general thesis that we're at a sort of sugar high, but I want to eliminate a few misconceptions about hybrids. Firstly, hybrids are not exceeding sales of EVs as much in the US as they are in Europe, but more particularly in China. The growth of hybrids in China in the last year has been literally explosive. The growth of EVs have been fairly good, fairly solid. A lot of it all in Tesla and in the direct competitors to the Tesla particular vehicles. But the growth in hybrids have been quite explosive. And what we see is that Europe, which has had good hybrid growth, and China, which has had very high hybrid growth, both are in a severe crisis of dealership. So in China, dealers lost $20 billion collectively in the first 7 months of this year, $20 billion collectively. That is not nothing. That's a huge amount of money in China. In Europe, we have a situation in Germany where the OEMs are about to cut out the dealers completely from the sales process and just pay them some sort of commission. So both those very powerful lobbies, just as the dealership lobby here is very powerful, are really in a death spiral, literally a death spiral. And in China, the government may intervene. In Germany, it's certainly going to intervene. What's going to happen in the rest of Europe, we don't know. But the situation is dire. And for manufacturers like Volkswagen, it is life-threatening. So we're at a crisis point that is deeper than just 2, 3, 4 years down the road, we see this change. So I think we're going to see a major crisis in China, and we are in the midst of a rolling crisis in Germany. And so the change is going to happen quite rapidly. Anyway, that's an aside really to this principal focus, which I agree with. I think that in 2 or 3 years' time, would I be mistaken to say that EVs are going to become less expensive in general than ICE vehicles? Is that a fair statement now, Sam?
I think it is, and it depends on geography, right? I think Bloomberg New Energy Finance put piece out showing that they're already less expensive in China. I think Europe and US are still more expensive, and we actually have a Associated Kosh who's doing work on that currently, so we can update you as we get more detailed findings there. But I think, yeah, this is certainly going to be the case. And again, it depends on the segment. And it depends on if autonomous vehicles make it such that you're not buying upfront miles and you're just going by the mile.
I think this is the part of the conversation too that I think what Hans brought up with the casting piece, right? So we're talking about the cost curve of the EV coming down far enough that in a few years, when you just look at it from a dollars to dollars perspective, you would have to pay a premium to get into a vehicle that is less responsive. So that's weird, right? But then the casting equation is also adding on top of that, right? Because as we're talking through this conversation, the battery is the primary driver of that. Because like we said, a lot of the legacy systems of building a car are still somewhat applied to electric vehicles, especially if you're outside of Tesla. A lot of the manufacturing processes are legacy processes, and you're just bolting a battery on top, essentially. Simplification of that, but that's what's happening. But with the advent of castings, and then with the advent of the unbox process that Tesla's looking to implement, right? These are additional forcing functions on electric vehicles from a cost perspective that are enabled by the packaging of having an electric vehicle. When you don't have the motor up front, when you don't have the drive shaft, when you don't have the catalytic converter and the muffler system, when you don't have your center of gravity being as high in a gas car versus an electric vehicle, the equation changes. So the packaging of the manufacturing changes. So how does that play into that cost cutting? Are you guys looking forward, say, 3, 4, 5 years down the road with Unboxed and castings, like Hans said, to see if the curve will be even steeper than that 15% for every doubling? I would love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, I would say typically what we see, even when we hear like crazy breakthroughs, typically the curve does not get steeper, but it can lead to, again, change in the cumulative doubling pace, right? It, like, if it's enough of the vehicle that it fundamentally changes it, but it's even...
So you bring it forward. You bring that forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, yeah, and I would say it's even for, and this was very surprising to us. We were doing modeling for SpaceX and like reusable Falcon 9 and all of this. And we're like, wow, I wonder if this is like a completely different curve from all of the history of like rockets in the past. And it's not, it's still following the same Wright's law curve. It's not, it's how should I put it? Since it's not time-based, you need someone to do it, right? And so it's people think and they hear Wright's law and they say, oh, this is destined to happen, when that's not the reality. It's what makes Wright's law a reality is thousands of people working insanely hard to stay at that frontier, right? There's no guarantee.
Multiple breakthroughs.
Yeah, exactly. And people say it's impossible. And then people work really hard and stay up and sleep in the factory if they have to, and then they figure it out. And it's okay. Wow, this is great. And it's not destiny to be on that. And I think that's the other learning here, is just because one person can do it doesn't mean everyone can do it. This is at the frontier, and the best can stay on that curve and can push it forward. But just because, say, Tesla is doing it, if there's not free tech transfer and equal execution at everywhere else, it doesn't mean that other people are going to match that cost curve.
One of the elements that really drives home the importance of is, because you said it, obviously it's cumulative doubling, it's production based, it's not time based. And so you can have things not trans into time. I'm just thinking about a specific technology like the batteries, for instance. We've seen a rapid acceleration. Now you're seeing, I think you said the learning rate was 28%. Is the time rate of cost reduction of batteries accelerated even beyond that 28% rate? And the reason I ask is because I would expect it to be greater, simply for the reason that the applicable market of batteries is much larger than automotive. And you can achieve greater production doubling speed in that significantly expanded market than if you were only doubling within automotive.
Yeah. So it's, if you look at the battery cost decline curve on an annual basis, let's see, the screen's mirrored here, but it goes like this, right? It's like coming down as consumer electronics really take off. And then it's okay, everyone's got an iPad, a computer and everything. And then costs go flat. And that was roughly the 2015, it's probably earlier than that. That's probably like the 2012, I would say, time period. And that's when you got a lot of reports and they said, wow, we're never going to get to $100 per kilowatt hour. Electric vehicles are going to be niche forever. And then Tesla makes the Model S and, you know, 1,000 times more batteries, exactly what you're saying, in a car than in an iPhone. And so all of a sudden there's a huge amount of demand, and then costs start dropping again for batteries. Right. If you look on that on a cumulative doubling of battery, it's a straight log line. And so that's why it's important when you're doing the Wright's law side, is you need to be able to forecast demand to some extent and tie that back into time. Otherwise, you can say a cumulative doubling is going to lower costs, but if you don't know how quickly that cumulative doubling is going to happen, then that leaves you one step short of being useful.
I know that very few people mark this moment, but in 2014, Tesla, this couple of $100 million company, announced a many multi-billion battery factory that they were going to build in Nevada. And everybody laughed at them because they projected 500,000 cars being sold by 2018 based upon this battery factory. I think that was the moment, that was the critical moment in this whole revolution. And very few people have marked that, but
yeah,
we would not have got that doubling without that factory.
And it was a literal doubling, right? Like they were literally looking to double the battery production capacity, global battery production capacity, right, so that they can make that happen. Go ahead, Hans. I see you came off mute.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's 35 gigawatt hours was the nameplate capacity they were looking for at the time. And that was roughly global capacity. And then Elon went on to say, and we're going to have to do orders of magnitude more than this in the next couple of decades in order to transition the world to sustainable energy.
An idiot.
Real.
Well, this is a debate that we've been semi-having, but it's in my mind, I'm semi-prepared to say mission accomplished on battery cost declines. That's no longer, I don't think that's a limiting factor anymore. We've got batteries. That's no longer a limiting factor, which was for a while. And now we've got extremely cheap batteries. You've got other OEMs pulling out. So it's like prices this year are probably artificially low relative to what you would have expected. But I think execution is now more of a limiting factor than actual battery costs. And so it's, to me, this is a change. This is really a changing of the guards in a sense, because it's like, all right, it's time to look at something new because we've crossed this off the list.
What you're saying is that Jordan needs to find a new limiting factor to report on.
I love Jordan's videos are gold mines.
Yeah, they really are amazing. He's incredible. I'd like to say one thing about this whole conversation, that the genius move of building that factory was matched by another genius move that everybody thinks was a terrible move. And that is the very aggressive price cutting by Tesla. Everybody said it was a terrible move and everybody was, and of course the portfolio managers were very negative, one portfolio manager, but absent that reduction price, we're not going to get to the volumes that we need to get the doubling to happen yet again and to get the price down to where it becomes at end of the game. And as much as we felt the pain as shareholders when Tesla took that step and didn't understand what they were doing, now it's becoming so much clearer what they did. It was a genius. It was the second great genius move.
I also think from a competitive standpoint, it's interesting. And again, I'd make the comparison to SpaceX and Tesla here is people saw them do it and said, wow, this was extremely difficult. They broke through. Now we can follow. But that's not the reality, right? The reality is, okay, now you've got a car manufacturer at scale making a extremely compelling vehicle for, I'll say Model Y, $50,000. And you're coming in and you need to start at premium. And so if your premium vehicle is not better than the $50,000, that's a very difficult starting spot.
And that's why I think we're going to see a very dramatic price drop in the coming year from Tesla. Very dramatic.